Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my friends. I'm Eric Olson. It is time once again for America's Most Haunted. Very fascinating show tonight. We'll be talking with psychic medium Christy Robinette, star of Investigation Discovery's Restless Souls. And I just got through watching it. Although, of course, I did not watch all the way through to the end because I cannot keep my mouth shut when it comes to giving things away. Investigation Discovery lifts the veil between the living and the dead with new one-hour crime special, Restless Souls, premiering Monday, April 14th at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. The program examines the 2004 murder mystery of Ashley Howley and how a complete stranger, psychic medium Christy Robinette, helps solve the case and bring closure to Howley's traumatized family. And what a story it is. As we have said, Christy Robinette is a psychic medium and author who began seeing spirits at the age of three. When she was eight, the spirit of her deceased grandfather helped her escape from a would-be kidnapper, and it was then that Robinette realized the other side wasn't so far away. As an adult, she is often called upon by law enforcement to examine cold cases in a new light and from a different angle. Welcome, Christy Robinette.
Thanks so much for having me. Good evening.
My pleasure. Great to have you. Terrific show. Like I said, I watched all but the very end of it, and it's very well done, and it's very well put together, and the recreated elements are very convincing, and gosh, what an amazing, compelling story. Congratulations, I guess. Is that what we say about something like this? I mean, you certainly left the world a better place than before you got involved.
Yeah, it is an awkward, unfortunately, it was a loss of a person's life, missing persons and such. It is sort of awkward as I do this press junket, when people say congratulations for the show, because I almost feel like, there's no congratulations, to be had, since it was, a tragedy that has happened. So it's kind of awkward, isn't it?
It's an in-between situation. I suppose what you're really doing, though, which counts, is you're mitigating. You're making things a lot better. You're helping to make a terrible, tragic situation less bad.
Absolutely.
And
no, really. And when I decided, and I went through a lot of thought process when I was asked to do this show, and I spoke with the family and that are involved within the show and within the case, and we sort of went back and forth whether it was a good thing or not. We definitely didn't want it to come across as we were trying to, use Ashley, and instead we wanted her story to have a broader type of a story, not just like I solved the case, and I really, in the show, and I don't think you saw that if you didn't watch the ending, I really tried to do the home run with it. Is this domestic abuse? Whether it is a female or a male who's in a very unsafe situation, and how they need to get out of it. And Ashley's spirit is adamant that her story isn't just, a psychic found me, but that, she wants to be an inspiration to other people that didn't have that voice when she was alive, and to have that voice, while she's, crossed on and able to use me for that voice as if, get some help. Just don't stay in difficult situations because you're afraid. And that's what I like, how the show sort of turns it into more. Because I don't believe that I solved the case. That sounds really bad. I believe that I assisted. I do give law enforcement and everybody else that put in a lot of hours and energy and time, to help with any cases, So...
Of course.
I think the show does that too. Yeah, and
well,
they did a great job. I'm actually really, really impressed. Indigo Films did a wonderful job. Discovery did a wonderful job. And it's put together in a paranormally haunting way, but it does mix in the murder and the missing and the mystery of it all. They did a really great job at editing it.
We have basically, actually, a fair amount of detail on the story itself, you know, right there on the show page that people can read. But I think they'd much rather hear it coming from you. Why don't you just give us kind of the basic setup and how you got involved in the first place? And that must have been quite a shock, although, I mean, I guess you are someone who has this kind of relationship with spirits on an ongoing basis. But nonetheless, the circumstances of this one probably was different from most, I would think.
It was a little bit different. I've been seeing spirits since I was three, sort of, you know, the bio that you read before. But Ashley was a little bit different. She woke me up about a year after she went missing. Ashley was originally from Livonia, Michigan area. She was in the Columbus, Ohio area, sort of trying to refigure out her life. She wanted a little bit of distance from her family, and she was trying to find some independence. You know, as she was 20 years old, so she was still trying to figure out, like, who she was, and the distance she thought was going to be something beneficial for her. And on June 16th, 2004, she ended up going missing after a 911 call stating that someone had broken into her apartment and her car was missing. It looked like there had been a struggle in the apartment, and after that, it just really went cold. There was absolutely, the police didn't have anything. The car showed up, I believe it was a month later, not too far away, maybe a mile away from her apartment. And they didn't have anything else, and it wasn't like her to not contact her family. It wasn't like her to not call on Mother's Day, and it just was not like her. And so the police suspected that it was more than likely her boyfriend at the time or ex-boyfriend that probably knew something, but they had no evidence to go on. And so about a year after she went missing, I woke up in the middle of the night to a spirit of a young girl shaking me awake and pretty much trying to get my attention that I needed to help bring some closure. I needed help find her. And now I'm from the Livonia, Michigan area. So it was, you know, people say, well, how did she find you? And I sort of laugh and say, well, I don't think it was a coincidence that we actually were, her family wasn't too far away from where I was, like mere miles. So I completely believe in synchronicity rather than a coincidence. And so I did not know her. I did not know her family previous, never been to Columbus, Ohio. And I started jotting down different notes that she was giving me. And for me, the spirit world is like playing charades. So they don't just sit there and then dump everything out for you, you know, and you have a clear, concise file that gives, you know, all of the, you know, information. You have to work at it a little bit. And so the charades came in bits and pieces. And I did something that I had never done before, and I actually Googled missing young girl. She's in her 20s, had, like, blondish brown hair, you know, and it came up Ashley Howley, and I was stunned when I looked at it. Then I thought, what am I going to do that now? You know, now that I've got her spirit and I've got her missing file on the computer, what am I going to do now? So I ended up emailing the Columbus police and pretty much started it off with, you're probably going to think I'm crazy. I promise that I'm not. Probably, like, all crazy people say that, though. So it was like, okay, yeah, she's crazy. You know, but Ashley's spirit came to me and told me a lot of information that I think I need to pass along to you. And I got a phone call back from the detective, and he took down all of the information that I gave him, and he was very nonchalant about it, I guess, I could say. And he pretty much said, thank you very much, but, you know, I'd rather give you the information of her family and you contact the family and you deal with them rather than myself. So I thought, well, this is a blow off, right?
Yeah.
And pretty much it really was. And so I contacted her mom, Jackie, and Jackie said Carrie, who was Ashley's cousin, was handling the case and to call Carrie. And so I did, and I gave her a lot of information and without them telling me any info. And they, both Jackie and Carrie, said, yeah, you know, I think you were talking to her because the information that you're giving is, it wasn't put on the computer. It's things that nobody would have known. And unless you knew her or you were talking to her. So I got their confidence, and I said, well, I volunteer to assist on this case because she kept coming to me. And so I was having a lot of sleepless nights. And she was a feisty young girl, and I'm like, I've got to get some sleep, so I promise, you know, I will do my best to put some closure to your case. And we spent a lot of years on this case, and I spent a lot of time with her in spirit and a lot of time with her family, too. And they've become like family to me.
Oh, I can imagine. Just the level of connection between you all. I'm really interested just because it's so, I shouldn't say alien, because I have had a couple of experiences myself, but the notion of being approached in an almost casual manner, and I mean casual from your perspective, I guess you're just used to it. Like you said, you started when you were three, so essentially your whole life this has been happening. But do you see the person, the spirit, do you see them vividly, or is it more vague? Do they come and go? How would you describe, and do you hear an actual voice, or is this more done telepathically? I mean, is it within yourself as opposed to outside of yourself?
So for me, it is, I see them physically. So I see them pretty much flesh and blood. I see clothing. I see hair color. I see eye color. I see pretty much like you and I. There's a little bit of an iridescence or translucency to their, what I guess you'd refer to as aura.
Right.
And there's times where I have to ask my family if they see what I'm seeing because I don't know the difference. And when they give me that look like, what's wrong with you, then I know my answer. Like, they don't really have to say anything other than they just have to give me that look. So when I hear them, like, I guess I'm hearing them telepathically. The interesting thing is I have an Australian Shepherd, and he's my buddy. He's about 12 years old, and he hears them. So he's the only, we have five dogs in the household and three cats, and he's the only one that hears them with me. And I know when there's a sense of urgency because he'll lift up his head, he's used to them. And when otherwise, he's just pretty much like, yeah, whatever, it's, you know, the regular night with mom. But with Ashley, he was very interested in Ashley, and I knew that she had to have been an animal lover because of the way that he reacted to her. His tail would wag, and he was always really excited, and I always can tell when she's around because of that. But murder victims, it still scares me because I still don't think it's normal because it's kind of not. But
no,
and I hear that
exactly.
With other psychics, you know, they're like, oh, it was normal to me. And I'm like, really? Because it was never normal to me. It still is not normal to me. I grew up in a very religious household. I was told that anything, you know, that I was seeing, everything that I was seeing, you know, so-called imaginary friends, you know, that it was demonic, you know, that it was not right. And so I was raised that way, and it's still, I know that I'm not talking to demons, but it's still instilled within me to sort of question my own sanity every so often. But I see their wounds, so I actually can tell if they've been strangled, if they've been stabbed, if they've been raped, if they've been... So I actually can see the wounds that are on them, which does help law enforcement And, you know, if they're dry, if they've been drowned, I can tell, you know, that they're in water and their lungs were filled, or if they were strangled. And to me, that's just not normal. It's just not.
Well, you have retained a common man's perspective on it, which is, it's probably good, because you keep kind of one foot in each world. I mean, on the one hand, you're describing things with such detail, and it's so vivid, and it's so real. But on the other hand, you're aware that it's not that way for most people. Most people aren't going through those things and having those experiences.
I tell the story, and they did a lot of editing. You know, you chafed for like 6-7 hours,
sure.
You know, for a couple of days, so they obviously have to edit it down. But I tell the story that at one point I went to a neurologist, and I thought, well, I must have a brain tumor, because I had already been to a psychologist and psychiatrist in my 20s, and they said, you're a medium. They pretty much did, you know, did all of the crazy tests. And they said, you know, you are just really talking to the other side. And I'm like, this can't be. You know, I am taught that this is, you know, flowing down, very Stevie Nicks thing. And that's why I say I'm abnormally normal, you know. I'm not new agey like that. I'm not, you know, burning the incense. And I'm just not. And so
you're a Michigan girl.
They're like, I am. I'm Midwest, you know. I'm the wholesome girl next door. So they said, you know, this is it. And, you know, who knew that, you know, a therapist would say that. So I ended up going to a neurologist and explained all of this. I'm like, I must have a brain tumor. And they did like a whole slew of tests. And I'm sure Blue Cross loved it, because there was no like really definitive reason why I was having these done. And he called me into his office, and I'm like, oh my gosh, he's going to tell me I've got, this is why I'm seeing and smelling and sensing crazy things. This is terrible, but this is going to make sense, right? And he called me into the office, and he says, you're a medium. And I'm like, wait, what? You know, now you're like the 17th person, so-called professional, that is validating this for me. And he said that it actually did, that there is something, and this was a while ago, and they've done more research, but the scans, the CT scans, show
right up
that mediums tend to meditate, they tend to go into that alpha state more than others, and that's that, like you said, that one foot on the other side. So I kind of go between, so that's when I went, okay, well, I'm abnormally normal. So it's we all have an abnormality. You know, I just talk to the dead.
That's fascinating that there's a physical manifestation of that, or that they can see that. And, yeah, I try to keep up with the various developments, and there has been going on a lot. Just in the last couple of years, there's been a lot with the neurological study, and, of course, the famous neurologist himself who wrote the book about his near-death experience.
His own near-death, yeah, absolutely. I firmly believe that, you know, that you've got the whole, you know, Randy million-dollar challenge and all of that.
Right.
And I do firmly believe that at one point there will be a scientific, you know, element that I don't know if it'll ever be proved, because I think science is ever-changing, even though, you know, people say that it's solid. I really, if you look through history, we're constantly learning about new things. Even looking at the planets, we're constantly, you know, seeing changes or
sure.
new planets or new stars. So I don't think that you can ever say that this is the way that it is and this is the way that it's going to stay, and you're not going to see the changes. And I always say that I wish that I had a video camera or a Polaroid to the other side so that other people could see what I see, because it is very comforting, you know, to know that they exist on the other side. They're not locked up in some faraway land where they're not with us. And I do a lot of paranormal. I get calls on paranormal situations, and I'd say 99% of the time it's actually a loved one just trying to, you know, say, hey. And, you know, if you have a temper here, you know, well, you're living, you have a temper on the other side, so you don't sprout angel wings and, you know, become, you know, perfect. So, yeah, if you're getting things thrown, doesn't mean you have a poltergeist. It probably means, you know, your dad, who had a temper, who threw things, is probably throwing things at you. So we still have that personality intact within our soul and our spirit, and it makes it both comforting, but it also helps keep the individuality of our soul, you know, on the other side, which helps me with law enforcement, too, to say, well, this person was like this, and they can say, oh, wait, yeah, you know, you couldn't just get, you know, it wasn't just a physical description, you're actually building their personality of how their family has said that they were, too. So it does help with a little bit more of substance, I guess.
Corroborates.
Yeah, because there's a lot of flukes out there that, you know, claim to be psychic detectives because it looks really good on your resume. And I guess that's what I've heard. And it's a very rewarding but very challenging and emotionally exhausting to even my family. You know, I gave up a lot of time with my own family with all the cases, you know, whether I'm traveling. And by the way, I've always done it, as of recent, I've sort of charged for my consultations, but I've always done everything on a volunteer basis. So, like the Ashley case, I made no money, you know, so for anyone that said, oh, well, she probably charged, you know, an outrageous fee, you know, to do this, it was zilch, zip, none. I did all of this because Ashley asked me to.
Right. And how could you say no, I guess, right? I mean, how?
No, she was not going to let me. She was not. No.
And obviously you felt responsibility yourself anyway, to try to do what you can, because you do know that you're special and that most people don't have that gift. She may not have had many other options, Christy. That's you.
Ashley. No, I think that she was at her wit's end. I think that she was probably trying to get through to a lot of people. I think that she was haunting her so-called friends, her group, and trying to help her, you know, on the other side. And I think she was driving a lot of people by those, you know, so-called hauntings. I think I was probably her last hope. And it was, you know, what am I going to do? I'm sorry, you know, closed. You know, don't bother me. Yeah.
I'm asleep. Leave me alone.
Well, actually, I do say that sometimes in a nice way, sort of like a, you know, do not disturb sign that's on, and I do need some sleep. And there were times where I had to tell her, okay, is there anything that you can give me that can help, or is it the same, you know, because often she would just be reiterating the same. And the police, you know, are like, okay, we got it, Christy. You know, this isn't necessarily helping us. It's not hurting, but it's not helping with different roads, you know, that she was offering me, and this is where she is. And I wanted them to just dig. You know, this is where she says she is, just dig. And that doesn't happen. That happens in, you know, the CSIs, but that doesn't happen in real life, unfortunately. It's a very slow process. If anyone in your audience has ever had a missing person or even a runaway, you know, everyone thinks it happens so fast, and it's like the 48 hours, and it pretty much is like 5 years. It's a very slow-paced, like watching paint dry.
So your process, this process that we're talking about for the show, was a five-year period?
It was, I want to say it was 3 years. It was about, once I got into the case, it was about a three-year period,
years. Still a very long time.
Yeah. And very frustrating for the family, you know, to have go through this wait. And, well, why can't she be, you know, why can't she be here? And why can't she, you know, why can't we dig here? And why can't we look here? And why can't we do this? And we did a lot of searches without the police department's blessing. I guess they were aware that we were doing the first search that we ended up doing, and went to Columbus, Ohio with Carrie, my husband, Ashley's sister. There was a couple other people that joined us. And so I don't look like the hiker, you know, I'm just a little bit more of a prima donna, I guess, you know, than looking like, a, you know, I've got makeup on and, you know, so, you know, we start walking along the park and, you know, obviously we're going to get stopped because there's like six of us. And it's not like we had shovels, you know, over our shoulders or anything, but it just didn't like look like the normal Saturday afternoon hikers. And we got stopped. And pretty much, you know, what are you doing? And we're like, oh, we're looking for a dead body. And they're like, just wait here, you know, while they called the police. And Larry, who is in the show, they depict him. And Larry was great because he pretty much, he was the ranger. And he said, okay, you know, what do you have? And sit here and draw me a map. And I did. And he said, well, I'll take you out. Let's go out and see what we can see. And he was very sweet to accommodate, you know, the crazy, you know, stuff that I'm saying. And he was he took me seriously, which was quite, you know, it was awesome. And unfortunately we were in the wrong location, but with the description of what she was giving me, he pretty much said, I know exactly where we need to go. And that we had to wait until another day in order to do that. And that was months later before they allowed us to do that. So it wasn't snappy at all.
Oh, I'm sure that must have been just extremely emotional, frustrating, and you felt like you were on the verge of it. You must have felt like you were in the tar pits, which just reminds me, I just wanted to back up a second. You made a very interesting comment about science and sort of the march forward, and that, you know, it isn't things, nothing is set in stone, and theories get replaced all the time. And the
right.
things that we quote unquote know now, you know, 500 years ago would have seemed insane or would have seemed like magic. You know, that's the other
right.
thing is,
you very
know,
supernatural.
Right. So I always have this an analogy in my mind, and I just wanted to toss it out there, just agreeing with what you said. I think of science and theories and the progress, not just science, but the progress of human thought and human knowledge is kind of like, I'm from L.A., and there's this really fascinating place there called the Tar Pits, the La Brea Tar Pits,
mm-hmm.
and that's literally what it is. You know, it's a big, it's like a lake or a pond, literally filled with bubbling tar. And what happened back in the prehistoric days is lots of animals would come because there was a layer of water on top of the tar, so they thought it was a drinking hole. So they'd come,
ooh.
and they'd fall in, right? So it's a tremendous
right.
place to find fossils, and, you know, there's all these layers, and it goes back tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. I don't know if it goes back millions of years, but a long time. So it's been this amazing repository. So that's the background on it. The way it was excavated, because they found it back, I think, in the 1800s, as they realized what this was and they realized what was in it. And
right.
so to start excavating it, all they did, talk about low tech, they just put down like big planks on top of the tar because it's thick. You know, it's very viscous.
Right.
It's not solid, but it's thick. So they were standing on top of these wooden planks on top of the tar, and eventually it would sink into the tar. But it was slow enough and it was orderly enough that they had time to then replace those top planks with new planks. So
right.
that is my analogy for the march of science, is you just kind of keep replacing the old planks with new planks, slowly but surely, and you have this evolution, although it's not probably nearly that orderly. It's much more in fits and starts as far as the progress of knowledge. But I've always found that analogy powerful because I can visualize it, and it makes sense to me. Then I wanted to bring up something else. Now I forgot because I interrupted myself, which is something I always do. All right. One of the questions I had when you were talking is, how many of these kinds of cases have you worked on? And is there a similarity between various cases, or are they do they kind of happen in the same way, or is it very different and unpredictable? And I suppose, how old were you? When did you first get involved with an actual case and helping the police one way or another?
I've worked on dozens of cases, each one of them unique. So it's not similar at all, and I think that's what makes it confusing but challenging at the same time, is there's no recipe for a murder. It's so different. And a missing persons and even the runaway cases. I've been very grateful to work on several runaway cases where they were found alive and well. That is the awesome, aspect of things. That
right.
makes it a little bit more challenging to me, because I talk to those on the other side, so I get really excited when I get to tell them I don't see them on the other side, so we still have time, to find them. The kidnapping, I had one that was very, very near and dear to me because it was a close friend of mine, and her daughter had gotten kidnapped, and that was about 3 days of zero sleep and doing a whole lot of work trying to get her back, and doing a lot of police work without, having the badge or the gun, connected. So it's everyone is completely different. My first real working cases came from, I thought this was crazy, right? And there's still times that I think what I do doesn't make sense at all, and it's very hard to explain, even to my family, who's like, okay, how do you do this again? And I honestly don't understand it.
Sure.
But I was a single mom at the time, had two young kids, had gone through a divorce, was pretty much broke, and I was working a full-time job working human resources, which is my background. And it came in very handy for knowing who to hire and who to fire. So the gift and my education sort of jived together very well, and I loved what I was doing, but it wasn't really paying the bills. So I ended up, I went to my minister, and I was having a challenging time with the gift, the so-called gift or curse or whatever I was calling it at the time, and I wanted it to go away because it was creating problems with my 9-to-5 job and with my kids and with my divorce at that. And so I ended up going to my minister and saying, look, this is what I'm seeing, this is what I'm sensing, this is what I've been experiencing since I was 3, in hopes that, he was going to throw some holy water, do an exorcism, whatever he had to do in order to rid it. And I'm Lutheran, so really there's no holy water, but it makes for a good visual. So
me too.
Oh, are you?
Yes.
What synod are you?
Let's see. Not Missouri.
I am Missouri.
What's the other? The kind of the more mainstream, I suppose, or the less fundamental. Yes, I believe that's what
ALS.
I am.
It's more liberal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah,
so
right.
I'm
you're in Ohio.
In the
we're
of
neighbors.
The ground. Yeah. Oh, okay. Great. Yeah.
Near
so
Cleveland.
Yeah, so I'm a Missouri Synod, which is, like I said, middle of the ground, still very, very conservative, not as liberal as the other. So I go to this minister who, pretty much is very old school, great guy, and a relative of his ended up coming through in spirit and giving me very descript information, and I brought that through to him as I was doing this huge confessional, and he looked at me and pretty much gave me his blessing and said, you know, I think that this is a gift from God and this is something that you should be doing and you shouldn't be, you know, hiding it. And I pretty much jumped up and down in a temper tantrum and said, wait a minute, I wanted it to go away, not for you to give me your blessing. And he handed me a business card and he said, I think you need to get a reading. Well, again, I went through K through 12 of Lutheran school, parochial school, and, you know, it's really ingrained within the theological, you know, element of this is just wrong.
Right.
And so I was stunned, you know, go see a medium. What are you talking about? So I did. I made an appointment and I decided that I will, you know, that I would, and I almost turned around a zillion times before, you know, going in, and I went in, and he closed his eyes, and he asked me to say my name and my birth date out loud, which I did, and he snapped them open, and he said, you see dead people, and I said, I do, and he said, you want a job, and I said, sure, as like a cashier, and he's like, no, doing readings. Well, again, I had no idea what that was. What's a reading? You know, a reading is reading a book. What's a reading? So I accepted his proposal and ended up, again, I don't believe in coincidences. It was synchronicity that across the street was a police department. And when it was slow days, the police would come over with their cold cases, and they'd throw them on my desk and pretty much say, okay, you know, help us out or give us information. So I was being tested. And I loved it. And so I built up a reputation through them, and it started to snowball into different police departments around the country that I wasn't typical and that, you know, that I could possibly help them. And so I started getting calls on cold cases that weren't always as morbid or grotesque as some of them were, but some were even lawyers would call me, their prosecutors would call and say, okay, what can you tell me about, you know, about this guy, you know, that we're prosecuting? And the defense attorneys would call me and say, okay, which case is going to make me the most money? And so we... So it ended up, you know, on both sides of the coin, and it was, I hate to say fun because I know that sounds really weird, but it was an adrenaline rush, and it was enticing for me to challenge my accuracy because I'm human. I wasn't always right. I'm not always right.
Sure, of course.
There was one case that I flat out said I know nothing about this. I know nothing about how to deal with this. It was a drowning case, and they wanted to take me to this huge lake and locate his body. And there's so much fluid, you know, with water, and bodies move, and there's the whole forensics of how bodies react once they've drowned and they float and all of that. So it just, to me, it was just too confusing for me. So that was something that I, you know, I know now part of my positives and my negatives, you know, what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. So, but I am human. I'm not 100%. So that was sort of how it got started for me, and the rest is history.
That's amazing. And you actually answered the question I was trying to think of, just of your own accord, and that was, how did this impact or interact with your personal religion? And because I could tell that that was important to you, and certainly in many, if not most, I suppose, denominations, that gift, quote unquote, as you said, you know, would be perceived with suspicion at best in many cases.
Oh, absolutely. I had to laugh. I get asked, which is it's very forward moving. I get asked to speak at a lot of high schools and talk about the paranormal and psychic detectives and there, especially around October, but it is year round. You know, that
sure.
They'll have me come, you know, speak with either a psychology class or a English class is typically and I had a class that asked me to come in. They were reading a psychic detective book, and they asked me to come and speak about my adventures in that. And these teenagers were very one spooked a little bit, but they're curious. But I had a couple that were religious, and you know they flat out said, you know, my mom and dad will be horrified, you know, that you are in this class, you know, and I was taught that this is awful, you know, and they gave me some hard questions about the Bible and about theologically, you know, how this is, you know, satanic and negative, and so it's still being ingrained, and I understand that because, you know, we're not supposed to be, trying to create zombies, you know, in the graveyard and, you know, trying to mess with the dead, so to speak. But I always say, you know, again, I think everyone has their own gift, and I'm very grateful for it now. I wasn't so much. It made me think I had something on my Facebook and post. Oh, I had put some tarot cards or some oracle cards on my Facebook. And I tend to do that a couple times a month and have, you know, use your intuition and choose a card. And that's what, you know, your intuition is telling you to work on. And I had somebody who worked for a Christian radio station who pretty much said, you know, you're messing with the devil and I can't believe that you're doing this. And I said, do you realize you're friends with me? You know, it flat out says I'm a medium. You know, why are you judging me off of that? And she said, well, I'll pray for you. And I said, great. You know, I'm all for prayer.
Thank
we
you.
All
yes,
can use
absolutely.
Prayer. Yeah, exactly.
I'll take that.
Yeah, and my kids go to parochial school. Everyone knows what I do. Nobody's thrown me out of the church. My license plate says spirits on it. So, you know, unless they think I'm an alcoholic, they pretty much know exactly what that means. So,
your cards are on the table.
Yeah, I'm not hiding anymore. And I think that says it for everybody. Messenger Between Worlds is a book that came out last year, and I pretty much spilled my guts within that book. And it's not just, you know, coming clean with being a psychic, but coming clean with who you are, period. So if you want to be a Broadway star, be a Broadway star and sing it. Or if you want to be an accountant, you know, do it. Or if we are so worried about what other people are going to say about us. We're so worried about the judgment of everything, and social media has not helped that factor at all. And I think it'd be so much better if we just raised one another up instead of, you know, trying to find something to ridicule and throw people down. So it's life in general. So when I think of, you know, well, what do people think about you being a psychic? Well, what do they think about you being, you know, a musician? You know, everyone's got opinions. So
what do they think about your flatulence?
Exactly. You know, everyone's got issues. So
that we sure do. Well, I like your attitude an awful lot. I find it actually very refreshing. Let's talk about your books. Why don't you name your books and just give me a little quick description. And we do need to tell people how they can get a hold of you and follow your career.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks for having me again. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
My first book was Ghosts of Southeast Michigan. So that tells a little bit of the paranormal accounts that I've had in this area of town that I reside in. I'm in the Livonia, Michigan, Detroit, Michigan area. Second book was Michigan's Haunted Legends and Lore, and that tells a little bit more of not just paranormal investigations, but the legends and lore that have extended throughout the entire state of Michigan. That was a fun book to write, a fun book to go on vacations. My husband was the tour guide, the driver, we say. The third book is Messenger Between Worlds, True Stories from a Psychic Medium, and that tells about my life story, my life journey, but it's a little bit more of an inspirational book also, not just boring, oh, here's Christie's story again. And I don't think that I'm special. I think that everybody has a gift of some sort. I don't think that I have a superpower at all or anything like that. Then Higher Intuition's Oracle. It is an oracle deck, and I wrote the book that goes along with it, and it's for those that sort of feel like they're stale, they're stagnant in their life, and it helps them connect with what they're supposed to be working on. This one's going to be a little bit interesting. This one's going to make me feel a little bit abnormal. Forevermore, Guided in Spirit by Edgar Allan Poe. And this comes out in October, and it tells the story of how Poe came to me when I was 13 years old and wanted me to help him with his murder mystery. And it exposes the story of who Poe really was, and how he lived and how he died, and who might have been responsible or who was responsible for his death. And it goes into past lives and talks a little bit more about reincarnation. And I was told by one publisher, not the one that published it, but one publisher, that it was career suicide. But I'm really, really, I love this book so much. And I know that I'm going to be critiqued. I have very thin skin, and my husband's like, are you ready for the Poe, you know, fans to be very upset with you? And I probably am not, but I'm saying I am. And I'm super excited for that. And then
that's nonfiction. This really happened, right? Or is
it
fiction?
It is.
No, it's real.
No, it is nonfiction. It is real. Yeah.
Okay.
The interesting thing is, as I have a I've been in negotiations with a show that will make it fiction. So I'm having a problem with that because it is nonfiction, but I think they think that it's so extreme that it'll do better as fiction. I don't know whether to be happy with that or not happy with that. So
that's TV
we'll
or film?
I've gotten contracts for both. So we're sort of waiting and seeing as to how we want to work that. And I'm really excited because it really is. I spent a lot of time with that. So I'm excited, and I'm hoping that in the next few months I can jump up and down and say, you know, it's coming to either your movie theater or it's coming to your, you know, local network. So I'm excited.
Well, that will help your skin. That'll help thicken your skin.
I don't know. I'm a Scorpio, but boy, do I have really thin skin. Even with Monday, the show Restless Souls premiered on Monday on Investigation Discovery, and someone said, "How are you celebrating?" And I said, "I'm probably turning my phone off and going to bed." So I'm super excited, but I'm just worried about the phone calls and the emails. So
I think people are going to like it. A lot. I think they'll be amazed by it. I mean, it's an amazing story, and it is, as we were saying at the beginning, obviously the foundation of it is tragic, and it's an awful thing, and how can people be so terrible to each other? But through your actions and your dogged determination and refusal to veer from this path for all of that time, you were able to help solve a crime, which that benefits all of society. That's not just the family. You know, that's all of society you're benefiting there. And obviously, Ashley herself. I mean, clearly you enabled her to have some sort of closure. Have you communicated with her since, or did she go away?
No, she still comes to me every so often, and it's more in a very calmer demeanor than the feistiness that she had before. And I think that is because, I won't say the ending, but because of how things ended up being resolved in the end. When I filmed this, the day that it was filmed, I actually checked in with her and said, you know, am I doing the right thing? Am I telling the story the way that you want the story to be told? And I never once got that feeling of, you know, don't do it or cancel it or anything like that. And so I almost feel as if, it's going to make me cry, I don't know why, I almost feel like this story, that it's her thanks to me So it's, you know, not that I need, you know, the media exposure or anything like that, but I think that it is her, and even those that do the psychic detective work, I think it's her gratitude to people that do work on these cases for, you know, everyone to say that we're charlatans or what have you, for her to say, look at, you know, there's substance behind this, and it's not, you know, all mirrors, you know, smoke and mirrors, that it actually exists on, and someone like this helped put closure, you know, to my case. And so I'm, in a way, I'm very grateful for her, just as much as she's extended her gratitude to me.
How did the show actually come about? Have you written about it? Is this story in any of your books? How did the production company know about you and your story?
I think, this is going to sound terrible, I think about a few years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, a production company had contacted me about another show. And they pretty much got, you know, my whole background of what I do and what I've done. And they passed me up on the show and said, well, we'll keep your name in mind. We like you. You're a Midwest girl. And it hasn't, you know, this hasn't been presented before. And Investigation Discovery was just really sort of getting off the ground at that time.
Right.
And so, and again, you know, this is the first show that they've ever delved into the paranormal element. So
it, I know
it
that.
Is, it really honestly is very unusual for them. So I think that they finally convinced this, you know, Discovery to take a chance. And they contacted me, and it was Hollywood's a pretty much hurry up and wait. And or hurry up and hurry up. And they pretty much
right.
said, okay, we'll be there next week. And I'm like, wait, what? You know, I've waited 3 years. You call me and say, we'll be there next week.
Ooh,
I'm like, you don't even
give
me a chance to get to the gym.
It's right now.
Don't,
come on.
I could have lost some weight. You know, I could have done this. But no, you don't give me a chance.
Oh, no.
So,
that's funny.
It's the girl.
Yeah, they say, you know, so. Film and TV, it's like war, you know, it's long periods of boredom and nothing happens, followed by short bursts of utter terror.
Yeah, pretty much. And it is, it's very nerve-wracking.
I just remembered, my goodness, I hope she forgives me. We have had a woman who has some sort of computer problem, so she can't listen to the show live on her computer. She has to listen on the phone. So she's been on the phone the whole show, and she did want to ask you one question. Would that be okay?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Our friend in area code 305, are you still there?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Eric. Thank you. Hi, Christy.
Hi. Sorry to make you wait so long.
Oh, no. It's been so interesting. I'm always on your Facebook. Christy, I have a question to ask you, actually two. Do you feel that Ashley is going to reincarnate and that's why she's still hanging around here? And the other one is about a friend.
I don't think that she's going to reincarnate, not right now. I think that right now she still has some healing left to do on the other side.
Thank you. My question about a friend. I used to work with this girl when I worked for the airlines. And then she disappeared, and nobody's known about her, not even her family. Some of her parents have passed. I know she got involved with someone who wasn't nice. Do you feel that she's still alive?
I don't, actually. I feel like she's deceased.
Thank you.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, you just gave me goosebumps. I agree.
Yeah, she was. They show her. I always speak to my guides. You know, if I'm not necessarily channeling that person, my guides are sort of my go-to, and my guides show her as a very bright star. You know, she was trusting and she was intelligent, and she was
beautiful,
comforting, beautiful, exactly beautiful person. Like, but people could talk to her. You know, she was like their counselor, and I think that because of that, she got herself involved with somebody that shouldn't have took advantage of her. And because of that, it actually feels like there's a foreign element to him that ended up doing something to her.
Yes, he was from Canada, French. She, like you and I, are all Scorpius. We do have sort of like very unusual lives.
Yes, absolutely. So I think that she's got that angelic. We're not Scorpios. Definitely are not angelic, but we have our moments, right? So
spiritual.
She's guiding people from the other side, and I actually feel her soul is being quite content because, like you said, a lot of her loved ones had passed away. So I do believe that even though there's not a resolution to her case, that she herself isn't revengeful. Well, I have noticed that a lot of those that have gone through this sort of thing, they do get that revenge factor to them from the other side. They want people to pay for what's been done to them, and I don't get that. I think that she wants justice, that she doesn't want it in a revenge element.
Do you think that he is still alive?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hope he carries that cross for a long time and knowing, you know, what evil he did. Thank you so much. I'll see you on Facebook.
Oh, thank you, dear.
Thank you.
Oh, and happy Mother's Day to you today.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
It's my son's birthday, so.
Well, happy birthday to him. How old is he?
Yeah, thank you. Oh, it makes me feel old. He's 17, so
well,
he's my baby.
Is he the baby?
He is the baby.
Well, I have younger, yeah. But man, I got old. Oh, boy. My oldest daughter.
I don't
feel
old with my age, but it's when they turn old, Eric. That's when I start to feel old.
My oldest daughter will be having a birthday in May, and I this just doesn't seem possible. She'll be 30. Oh.
Wow.
I know.
I've got a 20, 25, 23... 19 and 17. So I'm right there with you. And
yeah.
It's when the grandkids come is when I'm going to start to.
I've avoided that thus far. She isn't married. My son, the next oldest one, he's 26. So they're 29, 26 right now. They're both in May. He is married, but no kids yet. I'm not sure how far off that is. Yeah, and then I have two much younger. I have a big split there. Then I have 10 and 14.
Holy cow. That's like two separate families.
Well, that's exactly what it is. It's not like two separate families.
It is.
What's really been amazing is my wife now, you know, she met the older two. She came into their lives when they were pretty young. Kristen was maybe 11 and Chris was probably 8, and they are extremely close, always have been.
Nice.
And the older two are very, very close with the younger two, and my dad was telling me this the other day, or a couple weeks ago, I guess is really what it was, saying, you know, I just realized I have never, ever, ever heard either set of the two call the others anything other than my brother and sister, you know? So don't think of themselves, I don't think anyway, as half, you know, they think that this is their family. And I think a lot of it is how close they've been with my wife all along. And that was
Brian.
Something very different because I had several years of being single. It sounds very similar, actually, path that you have taken in many ways. And, you know, one of the ways that I knew that none of the women in between, you know, were the one was it just wasn't quite right with the kids. So,
I had this because my older two are actually my husband's. And the younger two are mine. So we always say it's the Brady Bunch, you know, minus two. And they've never squabbled, the four of them. have always gotten along really, really well. My daughter and son, they're best friends. I can still remember, you know, they're 5 years, but 3 and 5 or 5 and 7, and, you know, arguing and wanting to kill one another. And I say, you're going to be best friends one day, and they are. So but it's also, we got to give ourselves a little bit of credit too. We did a good job raising our kids, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
Back.
Yeah.
And
my, you know, whatever issues I may have had or she had with me, with my ex-wife, you know, I certainly give her all kinds of credit as well, because there's no way the older two would have turned out the way they have if.
Exactly.
If she had not been an excellent mother.
Yeah.
It is. It finally is. Her mother, my ex-wife's mother, just died recently. And
I'm sorry.
That was maybe, which was, yes, very sad. But it was probably the first time that there really, really wasn't any friction, and that we really were just sort of all there for each other, because, my God, you know,
yeah,
enough time has passed. I mean, we got divorced at, you know, 1990, so, I mean, probably the time has come. Hey, the show technically is over. It's actually over on the live end, but it keeps recording, and we get the vast majority of our listens on the recording anyway, and we do have one more caller. Let me see. Is area code 419 there?
Yes, I am.
Would you like to ask Christy a question?
Yes, Christy, do you feel that a deceased loved one, that something is going to come of her death?
Okay.
That maybe we're going to get some answers?
Okay. To you, that there's been a death in your family and you're looking for some answers? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Yeah, I do. And I feel like it's still another couple months away. But I keep hearing just have faith. And, you know, that patience is the hardest thing, right, when you're trying to, when not everything is adding up. And, you know, there's all these other people that are in control, you know, of everything. But I keep hearing have faith and have patience. So I do believe that by the summertime that you're going to have more answers. And I'm so sorry.
Thank you so much, Christy.
Did that answer your question? It would appear so. Hello?
Oh, I think I lost everybody there. Okay, for a second it just went blank. Sorry.
Yeah, I heard myself too. Well, I won't keep you any longer. What a pleasure to speak with you. Really, I've really enjoyed it. You're a very, very sweet person and very articulate.
Thanks.
And I really have enjoyed it. And I look forward to allowing myself to watch the end of the show now.
There you go. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoy it. I'm very proud of
Well,
you.
I did. It was excellent. It was very well done. And it goes very, very well for you. And I hope it's really well received. And I think people will really, you know, I've talked to, I don't know, we've been doing this show for about a year and a half. So I suppose, you know, I've done 60, 70 at least, I guess, interviews. And of those, a pretty good percentage, maybe 10% or so, are some form of psychic medium. And everyone is very interesting. And there's lots of differences. There's some similarities. But there were things that you expressed and maybe it's just the level of your normality, you know, seriously, that is different
you.
From anyone else who I've talked to. And I think you're realistic about it, and you seem really quite centered about it, and you've come to terms with it, and it sounds like it doesn't dominate your life. At least I hope it doesn't. But
no,
you know,
and I my family, especially my husband, he would slap me upside the head, you know, if it did. If it was the Long Island medium, Teresa Caputo, you know, I have to go to this diner and start, you know, channeling somebody's grandparents. He would be mortified if I ever did that. So
right.
I know how to turn the volume down. So
that is That is wonderful. Because I've talked to some who can't. You know, they just say, I've learned how to kind of, mitigate it a little or kind of, but I still don't really have a whole lot of control over it. And it seems to affect their health and certainly their sleeping and, just their whole lives, because if you can't control it, my goodness, it's just there always.
Yeah,
it
does sometimes control my sleeping. And it did. It used to control my health. But there's things that, you can definitely, we're always in control. We always can gain control. I think a lot of times, and this is a whole other subject, and I'll let you go, and I apologize, but I think a lot of times people use that as an excuse, and they become vulnerable, to that, instead of, well, wait a minute, I am the one that, can make those changes, instead of just allowing it. You either swim or you sink. We have that choice. So I make the choice of swimming. And I get tired once in a while, start sinking, and then I have to swim again. So.
I'm glad you make that choice. I'm glad that choice is there to be made. I guess we never exactly said we should refer people to we have links on the page there to your Facebook, and it's simply your name, KRISTY. RobinEtt on Facebook, and also your website, which is simply ChristyRobinette.com. And we want to, you have all kinds of interesting things going on there and lots of good links and multimedia. And that seems to be an excellent way to get a hold of you. So we encourage people to check out your site. Check you out on Facebook. I ran across you on Twitter. I think we've actually been following each other for a while.
We have been, yeah.
It's always fun to find that
small
out.
Small world, because, right.
Yeah, it is. All right, well, I really hope we can meet someday. We're not too far apart. And certainly when our book comes out, the America's Most Haunted book, that'll be in September, end of September, we'll probably be out there beating the bushes, so we might be in the same places. But certainly if you're ever
awesome.
In Cleveland,
I do go to a lot of different Paracons and such, so we might be, meeting at one of those. That'd be awesome.
And Lutherans have to stick together.
We do, absolutely. We have to make sure the demons don't get us. So
that's right.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, well,
thank you
again.
So much.
Thanks so much, Christy. Really enjoyed it. Really did. And wish you only the best. Have a great evening. And have lots of fun watching the show on Monday. I think it'll be very exciting.
Thanks so much. Have a good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.